Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Man's Voice here on this Sunday afternoon, and we are privileged to have everyone from the panel who's out there on. It doesn't look like, I don't know, something happened to the board just now, and I'm not sure I can tell you who all that is, but it looks like we'll just do what we can. Here we go. Wow. I don't know if I'll be able to. Wow. The board kind of went crazy on me. Here we go. All right. So I'd like to say once again, welcome to The Man's Voice here this Sunday afternoon. And we are with two of the members from the panel are on so far. I'm hoping that that's just, you know, a signal. But anyway, hello, Darius. How are you doing, sir? Hello? Uh-oh. Let me see. Darius dropped. Michael, are you on?
Yeah, I'm here. How you doing, David? Good to be on the show. Hope we have a good conversation.
I'm sure we will. And I see Darius is back again. Hello, Darius.
Yeah, man, you guys tried to sabotage me. I know y'all don't want to hear what I have to say today.
But
I'm doing great, man.
the board is doing its own thing.
Nah, man, it's great to hear you guys. Great to be here.
Yes, and I want to get started because we have a guest with us, and there are others as they come in. I will let you know as they come in, but we have a guest on the line with us, and his name is Rodney Kirkendall, and I think we could just call him Kirk. That's what most people call him. I met him when I was in Michigan, and he's a person that has a lot of ministry. And he's done a lot of mentoring with people, and he does a lot of things. If you look on his webpage and you can find him, I mean, on his Facebook page, he does a lot of talk about relationships and stuff. And we were talking the other day, and he had saw the movie Wakanda. And one of the things that several people have said about that movie is and we're talking about how men in society now are getting a lot of negativity, and women are kind of stepping ahead. And this movie, my understanding, that the women step out, they're in charge, they take over, and so we feel that that is just a trend in society that's going on, because when they start the movies, then it kind of follows, but usually they're picking up on things that are going on. So I don't know your thoughts. What do you feel about that, Michael?
Yeah, I think it's a trend in Hollywood to basically what you're saying is demasculinize, I guess, for lack of a better word, the black man. And, yeah, I think that's been a trend in Hollywood for quite some time to kind of make the black woman strong leader in the household and to like just demoralize the black man, like the black man as though he does not exist. And that has a lot to do with what's going on. I mean, just to take it there, with the whole Kanye West, Kyrie Irving, and this whole controversy we're having in the country, that's kind of baked into the cake as well. And I don't know if you want to dive deep into that, but, yeah, it's definitely something I think it's by design.
Well, I don't think the thought was just black men. I think they're taking men out of the pictures all the way around, I guess. What are your thoughts on that, Darius?
Yeah, David, I agree with you. It's not just black men. It's just men, period. You know, we're dealing with the wussification of American society and American culture. I mean, it's everything, not even just the movies. But if you look at the television commercials, you look at the sitcoms, it's like the dad is always the dumb guy. He's always the goofball. He's always the, you know, the one that doesn't get it. And everybody else in the family is smarter than dad. And it's like it's a trend, you know, like Michael said, that's been ongoing for a while now. And I even stopped watching sitcoms and stuff because you don't see smart guys anymore. You know, they always want to portray guys as being stupid, being a step behind, being insensitive, or being unaware.
All right. Mr. Kirkendall, I'm glad you're with us today, and we welcome you aboard. Tell us what your thoughts were on watching the movie and the thoughts that you might have on this subject.
Hey, David, and everyone, all the gentlemen, really, it's a pleasure to be a part of the conversation here. It's so unique because just looking at the difference is in the first movie where, you know, you have Prince T'Challa played by Chadwick Boseman, who is this strong figure. You know, I remember looking at the Black Panther as a child. My father was telling me about him as a superhero and, you know, being excited about that character to be played on the big screen. You know, representation means everything. And so it was kind of sad. I was a little upset the fact that they were not going to recast the character. I mean, I understand that Chad played such an important role with that, but, you know, you've seen new Batman. How many different Batman have we seen, you know? How many different Superman? So that was one that thing about it that bothered me. But for the other was just the strength that he showed in the first movie and then for the male to not exist and you know, it's kind of centered around his sister and his mother and their support, like, the general of their army is a woman and all the warriors are women. And so I think just that narrative is being pushed constantly. But, you know, I always ask the question, why? You know, what are we doing as men for them to kind of phase us out?
All right. I know, sir, that you also do a lot of mentoring with young men. Do you see any change in over the time that you've been doing mentoring and relationship conversations with people? Do you find that the female in a marriage is now stronger than before?
I think a lot of it has to do with not having the examples. I'm grateful to have grown up with my father in my home, and my mother and father have been married for 36 years, so I was grateful to have that example. But many of my close friends did not have that. And so I think that plays a little bit into it. Like, you know, if you don't have something to see, something to model after, you know, it's kind of difficult to get an understanding on how to play that role, if that makes sense. So I have seen that. So one of the things I do currently, I am a mentor at the Detroit Lions Academy. It's an academy that is totally funded by the Detroit Lions. And we meet with the young men there. They're about middle age, 14 to 15 years old, middle school age, I mean. And, you know, having these conversations with them, many of them don't have their fathers in their lives due to them being murdered or incarcerated. So I think That's definitely one of the things. Like, if you don't have that example, you know, how do you know what to emulate? And so that's why I'm so grateful to be able to kind of play that role, even for those that have a father in their home, kind of be a second voice, you know, kind of hammering in on these things. Like, you know, a lot of young men just don't know how to. And we're taught also a big thing that I'm really big on is we're taught to not express ourselves. I don't know if you want to get further into that, but that's been my heart to try to reach men and young men to inspire and to kind of help cultivate what's inside of them to impact the world around them.
All right. Don, I know you came in a little late in the conversation, but it's about relationships between men and the world and the society, how we're being phased out and females are being phased in higher. What are your thoughts on that?
Thank you, David. I like what I've heard thus far. I think it's such a blessing to have a male role model, i.e. father, in the house or in your life. Men are set up to be the leader in the family. And a lot of times, if you don't have a male in the home, it's kind of hard to try and be a leader because you don't have that example set for you. I had a strong father in my home as well. Mom and dad, they were married for 40 some years before they deceased. But it made a better man out of me having a father in the house. And I'm so glad to be a father to my children. I have two daughters. I think the father should be the spiritual leader, protector, and provider. And I try to emulate all of those roles to my children. And it's good because my daughters, when they see that, they will see a perfect example of the type of man fill their life, because when they get married, they'll have a strong father to say that they enjoyed. And hopefully their husband will be just that. It's very, very good to have a strong father in the home. And David, you do a great job yourself. I had an opportunity to see you as a strong father when you lived here in South Florida. So, hey, that's why it's a man's voice.
Thank you. I know there is a listener who I know that Bruce asked him to dial in and listen to the show. Would you like to comment on any of the topics we talked about, sir?
Just basically, I think the Great Society really destroyed maybe thousands and thousands of families by making the male almost unnecessary in the family. I come across that at work today in construction, where so many of the young men I work with have never grown up with a father figure, and it shows. That's my opinion, is that it did start with the Great Society. That's all I have right now.
All right, sir. All right.
Hey, David.
Yes.
Hey, David. One thing I forgot to add, you know, the United States did a terrible job of eliminating the father in the home, especially in the black community. I remember when there were some women that were on ABC, Aid to Dependent Children and Welfare. The man could not live in the home, and they could not be seen in the home, or else the finances were cut off. And I remember when during that time, if the caseworker came to the home and she checked the home and found men's clothing in the closet, they would cut the funds off. The man would have to leave the home. And that was a terrible time in America. So they really set an example for, I remember that happening in the 50s and in the 60s, David, and that was terrible.
Right.
Hey, if I may, David, weigh in on that. Yeah, I agree with you 1,000% on that, my brother. And I want to echo Mr. the caller, I think Kilpatrick, the brother from Detroit. I hope I'm not getting your name wrong, brother, but I want to weigh in on what he said. Kudos to you, first of all, for mentoring young people in your city of Detroit, because I do the same here in the city of Los Angeles, the city of Compton. I mentor young brothers who don't have, and the biggest thing I hear, like you said, you hear in your city of Detroit, is the father's not there because he's either dead or he's incarcerated. And it's by design for it to be happening in your city, Detroit, and it's happening in every city in America. Like Don Wiggins was just saying, the black man was taken out of the house by design by the government for many years. One being what you said, Don, as far as Social Security, the woman can't get a check if the man is in the house. Second, by putting the man in jail. 80% of black men in the United States of America have had some sort of contact with criminal justice system in this country. So it's by design that that is happening. And we got to look at that as opposed to just saying, you know, why is it happening? Why is it happening? We got to really look at the root of why it was happening. It's happening by design. And that goes so far as to entertainment business as well, David, as to why we're seeing it in Wakanda. The reason I made it about black, because that is a black movie. And I agree with the brother said. The first one, it was an honor to see Chadwick Boseman up there. I took my little young nephews to see that, and they're a little older now, and that means the world to them to have saw that, because they had never got to see that before. Like he said, how many Batmans have we had? We even replaced the Green Man. We replaced Incredible Hulk. We've had several different actors play Incredible Hulk. Why couldn't we get another black actor to play the lead? It's because they don't want that. They don't want to see another strong black man. So it's by design, and that's all I got on that.
All right, Darius, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I agree with Michael wholeheartedly. It's definitely by design. It's not an accident. If you read anything about Karl Marx or Frederick Engels, the founders of socialism, if you study Marxism, they admit that the very first step that the government does in order to implement whatever their agenda is to destroy the family, the nuclear family. And the first step in that is taking the man out of the home, because the government realizes that if there aren't any men in the home, that they can indoctrinate their children and have them to follow whatever philosophy that they want to implement into society. And I'm not trying to politicize anything, but it is the first step in the progress, in the process of socialism and communism, and that's to destroy the nuclear family. So what you're seeing happening now, and Michael and I have had this conversation before about black men and how, you know, the whole Section 8 housing thing that Don was talking about was created so that the women didn't have to depend on the black man. The government actually became their daddies and became their husbands, and that way they can indoctrinate our children and teach them their values as opposed to the family's values. So it's very it's done on purpose, and it's thought out. It's not incidental at all.
All right. You know,
I don't know if I would give that much credit to saying it's by design. To me, it's maybe done more out of ignorance. To me, that's one of the problems with liberalism. It's they just make so many mistakes, and it ends up destroying so many lives. I just have a hard time saying that it was by design. I just can't give the government that much credit.
Okay, I want to push back on that. I appreciate your comment there, and I want to push back on that. So you really don't think it was designed, let's just say, in the Nixon administration. You really don't think Richard Nixon and his administration and his chief of staff and everybody in his administration were a bunch of racist guys who wanted to destroy the black community? I mean, there's documented video, audio footage, audio of Richard Nixon saying his strategy was to destroy the black community. And these were some of the policies. The policies we're speaking of on the call now are still in place, but they were put in place at a time when you got to admit, caller, you got to admit there was a time that America was a racist country led by racist men. You got to admit that.
Of course. Fair enough?
But
this all started under Lyndon Baines Johnson with the Great Society in 1964. I mean, my family, the same thing happened to my family where, you know, many of my cousins went on welfare, and they brought up families without men in their lives also.
So how can you argue that it's not by design when you're giving an example of it happened to you and your family as well?
But I think it's done out of ignorance. I don't think the intent was to destroy the family. I think that they think that they were helping the family by making sure families weren't starving.
All right.
Caller, I think that you missed the point that Michael is saying. Let me say this. I think you missed it because it was designed. It was by design. I have a friend of mine by the name of John Amos. And John Amos played in a movie, in a TV series called Good Times. And John Amos was so angry. Man, I used to ask him, John, why are you so angry, man? You're in the number one television show in America. He said, Don, because they make me look stupid as a black man and a black man in this family. Norman Lear's got me saying good, JJ says dynamite, acting stupid. He says, I don't like it. And the thing is, he's going to eventually write me out of the show because he does not want a strong black man. And sure enough, it happened. So not only has the government portrayed destroying the black man in the family, but Hollywood and the movies have as well.
All right.
How about George Jefferson?
George Jefferson.
I'm asking.
Okay, let me address that because every time we point to the overly extreme racism, there's always that one token for people, guys like you, with all due respect, to push back on and go, hey, well, what about him? George Jefferson, yeah, that was a good show. It was a great show, and it showed a successful black family that went from the ghetto. They moved on up, just to, you know, to quote the theme song. But that was just one show. How many shows were there in movies were they that showed just the opposite, that had the black man playing the pimp and the black woman playing the maid and the prostitute? Okay, for every George Jefferson, I give you 10 the Django Unchained movies. Okay, so in regards to that one, there's always going to be that one token, so guys like you and people on the far right can go, we're not racist. What about Herschel Walker?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's take this on another phase. I wanted to, for those of you who just on the panel just chiming in, we have a guest speaker. His name is Rodney Kirkendall, and he is a minister with a lot of mentoring and relationship things that are going on. And that's how we got all this started, talking about Wakanda and the conversation that we had about where men were going now. But I just wanted to introduce him to those of you who are just chiming in. And I want to ask him a question. Rodney, I know that you did a lot of time and with a lot of people and mentoring and things like that. What would you say the strong point is among people and families these days with all the negativity that's going on? What is it about the family that you would say we need to start pushing this way? Or how do you expect Do you see men staying in the family more because you see the government still taking men out, or what do you see going on?
Well, I wanted to kind of jump in on the end part of that. So, like, we were talking about the system and how that's affected and then turn it to race. Like, all of that is not, I mean, facts or not, all of that is not helping the issue. Like, we're looking at, we got to look at it like, you know, we're starting a new season, right? And we can look at how, just look at the Los Angeles Lakers. I heard there's a gentleman there in L.A. So look at how they performed last year, and they're not performing too great right now either. But you have to look at how things went before, the decisions made, the moves that were made, and how that played out. And so we can't change what's happened systematically. We can't change the things and issues of race that we've dealt with. All we can do is look at that, identify that. It's just like, you know, like our opponents having game film on us, right? And understanding, you know, what we like to do and what we don't like to do, where we're successful, where, you know, where we may struggle. So understanding that there is a game plan, but how do we attack it? How do we address it? What do we do to change it? Not just the back and forth. None of that's going to change anything. So what we have to do is, you know, one of the things I started last year, I started a group called the Philadelphia Project. And, you know, we know the city of Philadelphia, we call it the city of brotherly love. Like, Philadelphia in Greek literally means brotherly love. And so I founded this project, this group, the Philadelphia Project, wanting to connect with men through brotherly love, connect them to Jesus. Jesus was a carpenter, but it wasn't limited to carpentry. So I wanted to connect with men, to connect them to Jesus, to help rebuild, restore, revive our hearts, revive our minds. And so I think that's where it starts. Like, each one of us reaching and connecting another brother, and also especially our young men, to try to pour into them, okay, so we can change this narrative. When I have these conversations with the young men at the Lions Academy, they're all talking about, you know, what they want to do to help get their families out, you know. And so it's really important to us to kind of start these conversations and to take somebody under our wing and to really, you know, show them. Like, I've always looked at it as defining success. We all can define success in different ways, but I look at success as reaching what you set out to do, but ultimately teaching someone else how to do it as being true success. And so that's what we have to do. We have to do the best we can to educate our brothers of every color, of every background, because we need each other. Yeah, I mean, I can keep going, but I want to hear everybody else's thoughts.
Yeah, if I may please, sir. Like I said, I respect everything you said. I agree with everything you said, and I mentor young men just like you do. So I'm with you 100%, and I applaud you for that. But I push back on what you said about there's nothing we can do about we can't change the system. We have to change the system. If we don't change the system, it's the definition of insanity. We're just doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Because as long as that system that it was put in place a long time ago is there, everything you just said is a fallacy. Everything you just said is Black Wall Street. We can build Black Wall Street all we want, but as long as that system's there, they can come and tear it down like they do every time. So we got to change the system. Otherwise, we're going to try to – your strategy is to build a castle on sand. We can't keep trying to build this castle on this system of sand. We can't do that.
No, I understand what you and I sorry I worded that way. Not to ignore it, but what I'm saying is I don't want us to highlight that. It's there, right? But that can't be our focus. So we have to understand that it's there. We acknowledge that it's there, but what are we going to do about it?
We have to change it.
You know? Right. I agree 100%. And I think it's in us empowering one another. And of course, we need that political support and to, you know, stomping, you know, to fight for these changes. But, you know, and that's why it's so important that we all have different roles that we play in this. You know, some are more well-versed in different areas. You know, that's, you know, I always say you can't have a army full of snipers. You need people with different gifts, different backgrounds, different skills, and different abilities to contribute to the team. And so that we can't – I'm not saying we don't continue to fight that. So I hear what you're saying. That's not what I mean. What I'm saying is the focus – that shouldn't be the total focus, if that makes sense.
All right. Darius, what are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I happen to agree with everybody so far. I just, you know, I think that it's so very, very important that we pay attention to, you know, as the gentleman was asking, you know, our guest was asking, how do we combat that and where do we go from here? We have to pay attention to the people who claim to have good intentions, the people who claim to want to help us out, because, you know, we talk about how black men are not in the home anymore and how that was by design, but we also have to look at that all happened by coming with the facade of we're trying to do something to help you out. So it was well-intentioned people, or people that we perceived as well-intentioned people, trying to give us something to help us out, which ended up, of course, contributing to our degradation. And so we have to be aware now as we look at all of these different programs that are coming out that the government is trying to push, we have to be aware that while this may look like something that they're doing to help you out or saying, oh, we're going to help the minorities out, we're going to help the black people out, we're going to help the poor people. When you look at those programs, you have to be keen enough and aware to know that there is a plot within that. And so the most valuable thing that we can do for one another, I think the caller pointed out Christ first and foremost. We got to have God. And you got to have some sort of God conscience. Even if you don't believe in him, you got to have – you cannot have a society with some type of God conscience. Number two is we have to teach rugged individualism. We have to teach self-responsibility. And that's how we come out of this.
Yeah.
And right now,
yeah, that's good.
Once again, not trying to politicize this thing, but right now the biggest thing that's holding us back right now is the educational system. And there is a party that for some reason does not want young, poor black kids to have a choice in how they are educated, or the parents to have a choice in how they're educated. And if we cannot get out of that system right there, if we cannot educate ourselves or educate our children and leave that into the hands of the government and let them decide how they're educated, we will never, ever be able to break this cycle. It will just continue to decline.
Right,
David. I'm glad you called on me, David, because man, I like what we're talking about right now. We're hearing some wonderful comments from men. I'm reminded of the drug epidemic that destroyed a lot of men, especially men of color. Because they became mules, they became users, they became addicted, and they went to prison, and they died, and their lives were destroyed, and their families were destroyed. And it was systematically designed to put that drug culture in the community. It destroyed a lot of people that I grew up with in Michigan. And Vietnam coming home, drug users. And then living in Miami now, I saw the effect of what it did in Miami. A lot of young men were incarcerated because the cocaine epidemic was so relevant down here. And the women had to pick up the slack. They started raising children and they went to college, and now they own businesses. The women are the majority of the entrepreneurs in the state of Florida. And I think that we need to really start mentoring our men to be entrepreneurs. We are the biggest consumers in the world today. We consume more than any nationality in the world. We're not producers.
That's right.
We're consumers. We've got to own businesses. And, you know, what gets me is I see a lot of, God bless them, Cubans come to America. And when they come to America, they're not looking for a job. They're looking for a business. And they get a business, and they all sleep in one house, and then one by one they launch out to open up a business. And we come looking for a job. We've got to be entrepreneurs. We've got to control our own destiny financially.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm at.
All right. I see. What are your thoughts on this, Spencer? Spencer must be babysitting. What are your thoughts, Spencer? All right. So, what are your thoughts? Wait a minute. Spencer, were you jumping in?
Friend of Bruce?
No, no.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right. What about... all right, let's go. Soel, I don't know how much of this you understood what we're talking about, but what you did here, what are your thoughts?
I'm sorry, who are you talking to?
Soel, he's in Nevada.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, let's move on. So we only have a little time left, but I want to put it out on the table. Rodney, is there anything you would like to ask this panel? Everybody's gone silent.
I want to ask. You know, we one thing I try to encourage men in our area, men within my group, men within, and it's pretty cool. I love that you're doing this, David, that you're having men from all sorts of backgrounds and ages and all over the country getting together and talk. I mean, that's kind of I'm doing something similar just in this accountability, but like, because men don't talk. And so I want to ask, you know, are any of you having these type of conversations in your local communities, in your on your job, in your neighborhoods, in your churches, or your places of worship? Are you having these type of conversations there? Because men don't talk. We, you know, I've always been an expressive man. I was the only boy. I had two sisters and a cousin that lived with us that was female as well, and I had my mother and father. So I understood when the cycles were coming. But I learned how to be expressive, and I didn't realize until I got a little bit older that not all men were like that. And getting around some of my friends. So I'm just curious if you all are having similar conversations in the areas where you live.
Okay, let me start off with Michael. What are your comments on that?
Yeah, absolutely. But the problem with that is, not only as you say, calling my man, we're just not expressive as men anyway. But the bigger problem there is we're up against social media. We're up against the movies and the music. Because when I talk to my young brothers in Compton, and they call me Uncle OG, and that makes me feel good because I was blessed to make it to be Uncle and OG to these young men, and I tell them that all the time. I say, I hope you young guys can be called Uncle and OG someday because you guys are so many of you guys dying at a young age. But yeah. What they're up against is I'm up against, when I'm telling them that, I'm up against Lil Wayne. I'm up against Drake. I'm up against Chris Brown. They want to live like those guys, okay? And those guys are telling them to do all kind of horrible things, I hate to say. So to answer your question, are we talking in the community? We are, but there's a louder voice that we're talking against.
All right, Don, what are your thoughts? What are your
thoughts?
Wait a minute.
I just wanted to go back with my brother there.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you have anyone working with you as you're talking with these young men?
Yeah, the community center. I go to a community center, the Compton Community Center, and I go there and I talk and play with those and, you know, work with those guys.
Yeah, and it's going to be a constant fight. Yeah.
Well, not really. Sorry. Michael, you're on the right track, Michael. And I like what you said, because those are entities, Michael, that we have to fight on a daily basis because they have such a dramatic influence on this younger generation, the social media platform, and these recording artists. And it's designed. The record companies designed it that way. There used to be love songs back in the 50s and 60s. Baby, come on over to my house, my girl. I ain't no way to love you if you won't let me, and things like that. Now it's, I hate the bitch. I'm a pimp on the bitch. I'm a killer, a rapper. You know, it's designed. And the thing is, this is such a strong influence on our younger generation that you ride down the street and they playing a gangster rap up loud, cars bumping, stereos bumping, saying things that you wouldn't want your child to hear. I mean, you know, we got a job to do. And caller, yes, I'm involved with men on a regular because I'm a minister in our ministry.
Amen.
And we deal with youth, men. We have a men's group. We talk. You know, my mind's good. Like a bad neighborhood. I don't go up there by myself anymore. I take Christ with me.
Amen.
All right. Darius, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I'll tell you what, man. You guys have just convicted me. I admit that I have not been involved as much as I used to. I used to coach Little League, and I would deal with kids and talk to them and mentor them. And once my son got out of high school, I stopped doing that, and I haven't been active. And then I used to speak in a men's group at our church, and they did not want to hear what I had to say, simply because once they found out I was a conservative, they turned deaf ears and just automatically assumed, and I've been called names like, you know, Uncle Tom, and, you know, of being accused of you know, being a Sambo and a house Negro and all those types of names. So I kind of got discouraged and stopped really talking. And so today you guys put a spark in me. Thank you, sir, for the brother's guest today. And thank you, Don and Michael. You guys inspired me. And I am going to get more involved like I used to.
And Darius, awesome. I'm glad to hear that, man, because you got so much to offer young men. I love your spirit. I love your way of thinking. So what if they call you Uncle Tom? So what? You got some views that are very good sometimes. And that's what I loved about growing up in school. We had debate classes. And, man, they helped me out tremendously.
Yeah.
Hey, if I could echo that real quick, and if I could echo that in regards to my brother Darius, I agree with you, Doug. I've gotten to know Darius and met Darius, and yeah, Darius, you do have a lot to offer, so it is good to hear that you're going to go out and talk to the young brothers. And I tell you all the time when I say it on here, Darius, his heart, he's on the right track, he's just on the wrong train. So I'm trying my best to get him on the right train.
All right, Sarah.
Well, Darius, I want to encourage you, man. You know, Darius, I want to encourage you, man. Just something I like to live by is like people can say whatever they want as long as I don't allow it to be true. So you know who you are, you know whose you are. And so you just continue to operate in that and take boldness in that and understand that, you know, it's really not even about you. It's not about them. It's not about it's about, you know, the youth and what we can do to inspire them to help turn this narrative, to help turn this around. So God bless you, man.
Hey. Amen. Thank you, brother. I appreciate you guys.
All right. The gentleman that is here with for Bruce, we didn't get your name, sir, so I don't know what your name is. What are your thoughts?
My name is Phil. I actually spent about half my life in Detroit. I now live just north of the city. So I've seen everything good and bad in the city. I think a lot of it has to do with morality. You know, is there right or wrong? You know, a lot of people that I deal with do not believe in right or wrong. And I try to make examples. You know, if there's no right or wrong, you know, what if I do something to one of your kids? Isn't that wrong, no matter what? So I think if we go back to the basics, something like maybe the Ten Commandments, that's just, you know, my opinion. I have seen it all in Detroit, and I am a student of history. I know my longtime secretary grew up in Paradise Valley in Detroit, and she remembers how vibrant that community was before it was destroyed.
All right.
And I think she used to say that people in that community only depended on themselves. So everybody, most people behaved when they, you know, when they could only depend on, and they knew they would get in trouble by their neighbors or their parents. And I think that's changed because of the system. That's it.
Okay. All right, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Let me talk.
Okay. Soel, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Do you have any thoughts or comments you wanted to bring to the table today?
Well, not really. I'm from what I'm hearing about what you guys are saying. You're talking about young men and how things are different and stuff of that nature. So, I mean, I guess it kind of just comes down to your parents. If you have good parents and your parents instill good values in you, that in turn will be spread to the people that your kid interacts with, and then in turn will spread to someone else, which in turn will spread to someone else. It depends on who we have as teachers. There's a lot of people, and I can speak from personal experience, that should not be in classrooms and teaching people. And it just comes down to a certain foundation of where we have to build up on certain things. People really have, like, it's all about me attitude these days. A lot of people tend not to care about other people. And we really do need to get back to a lot of community fellowship that we had a long time ago, where everybody knows each other and we know what's going on in people's lives, and we try to make a validated effort to improve that.
All right. For those who might not know, of course, we had a speaker on right now, Mr. Kirkendall, at least we call him Kirk. But for him, sir, for you, sir, I wanted to tell you that Soel is still in college. He's the youngest on the panel. So if you had any questions about how that's going, we could talk to him. And let me ask you, Soel, we were talking earlier about there are so many young families without fathers. Do you see that still happening at that level?
Yes, no. I mean, it just depends. I mean, I surround myself with people who think very similar to me, so I know people who are my age and who are fathers already, and they want to be in their child's lives. And at the same time, I know people from high school. My friend, she was 18 with her third kid on the graduation stage, pregnant. And it's just the lack of morals that are installed in your kids, not having a father around, and trying to find a supportive male figure in other people. So it really just comes down to who you have in your life, who you have in your child's life, and just being there. I mean, if you are a father, I mean, like, you have to step up and do what is required of you as a man for your kid. And some people choose to be deadbeats, but that's okay. But, I mean, especially with this court system, the court system is unfair and unbiased and really biased towards men. You'll have a man out there sometimes working two jobs, and you'll end up finding people that who are in child support and just trying to make things harder for the dad so they can get more child support money.
All right.
Hey, David.
Yes, sir.
We got a situation in America right now where 60 or to 65% of the homes are ran by women absent a father in the home. And it's a prime example of babies having babies. What I mean by that is the younger generation that I'm seeing right now is an enormous amount of young women that had babies. They were babies. And the man or the boy would grow up in the home on welfare. Dad absent the home or trying, as Sue Well said, trying to pay child support. And the mom saying, how's my little man today? Well, he's not a little man. He's a young man or a boy that needs mentorship. And that's what I'm seeing today. And the thing is, it's a travesty because, like Michael was saying, I take pride in being an OG. I get called the OG as well, Michael. And, man, it's a term of endearment to me because a lot of my brothers didn't make it to be an OG. And, man, I tell you, back when I was growing up, there were some real OGs. And I just want to know, are you guys seeing the same thing I'm seeing?
Well, real quick to that, I'm just to break down the numbers. A lot of it has to do, everything you just said, Don, is like I've been saying, we've echoed on here, and I want to reach out to Bruce's buddy just to see that you still not feel it's by design, because everything you just said, Don, is by design. It was designed to work that way. And I'm going to just give some numbers real quick to you. Right now there's 2 million men in prison in the United States of America. 2 million men. So those are 2 million fathers who are not in the house. Okay, when in the 1970s, when Jimmy Carter was the president, there were only 300,000 men in prison back then. So we went from, Don, when you were growing up, to 300,000 men in prison to 2 million. So that's 2 million men who are not at home being dads right now, but they were back in the 70s. So that's why it's a lot different. It's by design. So I want to hear, David, I apologize, but from Bruce's friend, do you still not believe it's by design?
I still believe it's by it's not by design. I think it's by ignorance. I really do believe that. I mean, I think it's just as bad, or almost as bad. But I think it's, you know, the intent is to help, but it, obviously it doesn't help. I've seen it. I believe in racism, but I don't think a large portion of the government is out to destroy families. I think they are destroying families, but I just don't think it's by design. So I guess we're disagreeing on semantics.
All right. We have just about 5 minutes left in the show, but I want to get into something else possibly. So why don't we open up the table. Rodney, was there any, I'm sorry, Mr. Kirkendall, was there anything else you would like to ask this panel? Where'd you go?
I'm really encouraged by what I'm hearing. And the young man mentioned a classmate of his, you know, having, that's really sad that she had 3 kids, you know, by the time she graduated high school. But that right there is a result of a man not being present, not showing her the love that she needs. So we talk about the need for a man in the household and the effects of it on the young man, on the son, but also on the daughters, like the understanding, you know, how a woman should be treated. And for her to get an understanding, I think one of the gentlemen mentioned that, having daughters and how they learn, you know, the value of a good man and what to look for. And, okay, I always look at it like I'm not a father myself. I'm an uncle, but I feel a father should be the first one to take his daughter on a date, to give her flowers, to buy her candy, to do all these things that some knucklehead is going to try to do when she gets of age of dating, because it's like, okay, when he does that, he's like, oh, she's like, okay, so what? That's cool. My dad did that. what else you got? What substance are you really going to bring, you know, to this relationship? You know, if that makes sense. Any thoughts
you know,
on that?
You know, I'm the young man that talked about his daughters, and I have two daughters. Let me show you some of the things I talk to my daughter about. I teach my daughter how to slow down, and when you get to the door, don't open the door yourself. Allow the man to open the door. Don't be so aggressive to open it. Allow the man to open the door for you. And then watch and then demand that the man open the car door for you. And then when you walk down the street with the man, walk on the inside of the sidewalk. Don't walk on the outside. Things like this. And these are things that fathers need to teach their daughter.
And the sons need to know this.
Let me jump in with some things that I saw, and I was trying to bypass it, but I think now's a good time to throw it out there because we talked many a month ago about strong women in these positions. All of them have interracial marriages. And we talked about when you young color women feel that's necessary. Well, in the newspaper, there's a big article. It was a full-page article. And on, in this newspaper, there's an interracial couple sitting on a bench. And the title of the whole thing is, What It's Like to Have White Privileged Husbands. And it says, when you read it, it says, I have a white husband, blue eyes, pale skin, with $10 words, drink cider. His pants have a minimum of 6 pockets, and they come in one color. No doubt about it, my husband has privileges, so I have privileges. When he speaks, everyone listens. So when I dialogue with the male plumber or the male mechanic, I ask my white husband to make himself scarce. Otherwise, these men will direct their questions to him long after my husband explicitly declares that house and car are my jurisdiction. So I think it's great to have white husband privileges. So, and that's in the newspaper. When they pick it up, you look at it and you read it. And I'm thinking when you guys are talking about that, you know, it's all there. It's being passed out. It's in the media and stuff. It's right there in my face. What are your thoughts on that one? Mr. Kirk, what do you think? Hello? All right.
Sorry, I lost for a second.
Yeah, no problem. All right, what are your thoughts on that, Michael? Am I losing everyone? Darius, do you understand where that came from?
Yeah, I guess I can see. I mean, what she's saying is logical. It makes a lot of sense. I don't know about the white privilege part. It's funny that you brought that up because, you know, we were talking about what we should do in terms of helping with this situation with the men being being emasculated. I think one of the biggest things that we do that's wrong is our leaders and people like I heard LeBron James and Steve Harvey tell our young men that the world is against them, that they cannot make it, that they will not succeed, that the police are out to kill them and all of these things. And I'm not saying that none of this exists, but to have this as the controlling narrative does no good for our young kids growing up. And that's one of the reasons why I was so against the critical race theory being taught in our schools. Telling our kids that the world is against you and you can't succeed does nothing at all to help their cause. And especially when it comes from people who have succeeded. Like I look at LeBron, you made it. Why can't another young black kid from the ghetto make it outside of playing basketball? Steve Harvey made it. Why can't another young black kid make it? We need to stop telling our kids that this country is out to kill and destroy them. That's counterproductive.
I agree with you, but we'd like to tell everyone.
I agree.
Think through the man's voice.
I disagree.
We'll be back again next week, same time, 6 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Have a great week, guys.
All right, you too.
Thank
Thanks
you.
For having me.
And I'd like to thank our panel.
Good show, guys.
Yes, thank you, Phil. Thank you, Kurt.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you all for having me.